Welcome to the ADAA podcast on treating PTSD and traumatic brain injury. Today we're talking with Dr. Richard Bryant, who is the director of the Traumatic Stress Clinic and a professor of psychology at the University of New South Wales in Sydney, Australia. Thank you for being with us, Dr. Bryant, coming all the way from Australia. Let me ask you the first question, which is, how common is traumatic brain injury in incidents of where PTSD is diagnosed?
Well, you'd think that was a simple question. In fact, it's not. It's actually very controversial because people assess and define traumatic brain injury in different ways. But if we look at the major surveys that have been done in the community, it can be about 300 cases in every 100,000 people. But really, probably a more meaningful statistic is how many people who get sustained an injury, how often do they tend to have a traumatic brain injury? So in the military, for example, in the recent conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan, it's between 10 and 20% of troops are meant to be sustaining a mild brain injury. If we look at people who are admitted to hospital following a traumatic injury, that can be up to 30 or 40% of people have a mild traumatic brain injury. And that sounds like a lot, and it is, but typically most assessments aren't finding that many because normally they're not identified. And I think that's an important point to note about mild traumatic brain injury, in that most cases people have physical injuries, and when they go to hospital or ER, doctors are usually too worried about their orthopedic or other medical problems, and so often they're not really assessing for the mild brain injury. But if you do take care, it can be up to 40% of an injury population.
What exactly distinguishes TBI, and how does a clinician assess or diagnose it?
Well, the core issue of traumatic brain injury, particularly mild traumatic brain injury, which is the most common form, it's a knock to the head or some injury to the head which has affected the brain. And what we see after that for a mild traumatic brain injury is that you can have a loss of consciousness, or you could have impaired consciousness or confusion for less than 30 minutes. And that's, if you like, the distinction between a mild traumatic brain injury and something that's more severe. A moderate or severe traumatic brain injury, then the period of loss of consciousness is longer than that. And there's some other symptoms as well that different definitions use, and probably the other major one is what we call post-traumatic amnesia. And that's the period of time after the injury where you don't have continuous and ongoing processing and retention of information. And to have that for less than 24 hours, that's another definition that people use for a mild traumatic brain injury. So that's really the core of what we're looking for. It's an injury to the head and it's impaired consciousness for a very brief period of time.
Where do TBI and PTSD intersect?
Again, that's a huge question. They intersect in many ways. One of the core issues to understand at the outset is that many of the symptoms overlap. So when we look at the symptoms of mild traumatic brain injury, it could involve amnesia, depersonalization, derealization. These are very, very common symptoms of PTSD or acute stress disorder that we would call dissociative. So in the very immediate aftermath of a trauma, people will have those very, very same symptoms. So it's not necessarily a traumatic brain injury when you see somebody like that. It could just simply be the effects of very high arousal. And again, symptoms such as irritability, insomnia, concentration deficits, these are all a function of high stress. They're also typically seen in mild traumatic brain injury. So it can be quite difficult to discern between one and the other. So really what we are looking for are the presence of the core symptoms of PTSD. So really you will see re-experiencing, intrusions, nightmares and avoidance. And that's really the telltale signs that we have PTSD over and above traumatic brain injury.
Does one affect or exacerbate the other?
Well, that's an interesting finding in recent years, because for several decades, people have thought that if you have a traumatic brain injury, then you cannot have PTSD. Because if I'm knocked out and I'm unconscious, then I'm not encoding the traumatic event. And if I'm not encoding the traumatic event, then how can I have PTSD? In recent years, that's been overturned. Whilst we've found numerous studies now where people do develop PTSD after brain injury, but what's very intriguing is there's been several studies in recent years that tell us that people with mild traumatic brain injury are probably more likely to have PTSD than if you don't have a traumatic brain injury. And this has been quite a development in the field. There's been some seminal studies of troops coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, as well as studies, large-scale studies with civilians. And these are saying that if you have a mild brain injury, you have increased rates of PTSD, but also other anxiety disorders. People are asking the question, well, why is this so? And we don't really know, but there are several hypotheses that people are putting forward. One is that the knock to the head could affect important neural circuitry that we know is really important in regulating emotions and assisting us to engage in the extinction learning that we need to engage in to overcome a traumatic experience. So it may be a mild traumatic brain injury is actually compromising that particular neural circuitry that we need operating properly in order to overcome a traumatic stressor. Alternately, we know that we need cognitive resources to deal with the stresses after a traumatic event. So we will need to be able to have working memory functioning properly. We'll need to be able to use the right cognitive strategies to deal with things. Possibly these are affected by the mild traumatic brain injury. We're not quite sure, but there's a lot of attention at the moment on this interaction and how one is actually compounding the other. And I think the other important point to note is that numerous studies now are telling us that the impairment that we see after mild traumatic brain injury is not because of the brain injury. If we look at people who have a mild traumatic brain injury but really don't have other psychiatric or psychological problems, they really aren't suffering impairment. The patients who are suffering impairment are those that have the mild traumatic brain injury in conjunction with a psychological disorder, such as PTSD, depression, generalized anxiety, one of those disorders. Now, if you have those disorders with the brain injury, then you really will have impairment problems. And again, this is challenging a long-held belief held by neurology that the brain injury itself creates problems, such as post-concussive syndrome, which was seen as the signature injury, if you like, that flows on from mild traumatic brain injury. But now we're finding out that really it's all the stress reactions that are accounting for those symptoms. It's not the brain injury itself.
Interesting. Let's move on to treatment. And perhaps you could address what kinds of treatment is effective in your experience or in what the literature might be telling you.
Well, the first point to note there is what are we treating? And what we don't do is we don't treat mild traumatic brain injury because that's actually not a condition. That's simply an event. And that's an important point to make because a lot of people confuse that issue. If we're trying to treat a condition, there's probably two potential conditions we can treat. One is post-concussive syndrome, and they are the symptoms of dizziness, sensitivity to light, sound, irritability, concentration deficits. That's a constellation of symptoms that people often see after traumatic brain injury. But because we now know that that's mainly influenced by post-traumatic stress and depression, really the best way to treat that condition is by treating the post-traumatic stress and depression. In terms of treating post-traumatic stress disorder in mild TBI, what the evidence tells us is that we basically use the same cognitive behaviour therapy techniques that we use as we would with anybody else. It's important to note that mild traumatic brain injury actually has very, very minimal impairment associated with it in terms of cognitive functioning, emotional functioning. So therapy skills you're going to bring to treat somebody who has PTSD after a mild traumatic brain injury, they will be exactly the same skills as one would use as any other patient. There will be gaps in the person's memory for the event, but we often have gaps in patients' memories for trauma without brain injury. When we do imaginal exposure, which would be one of the core strategies that we would use, we would still have the person relive the memory of their trauma, repeatedly, and they just would just skip over the bit that they don't remember. And the only one study that has been done, the properly controlled trial, tells us that that works as effectively as using CBT with a non-brain injury population.
When somebody comes in for treatment, is there a reasonable or typical number of sessions or an expected length of time or frequency, factoring in all the individual factors, but is there any ballpark information you could give?
If we're talking about mild traumatic brain injury, again, we would say it would be identical to anybody else. And so if we look at nearly all of the studies that have been done, it's anywhere between 8 to 12 sessions. Should treat the person very, very well. We should qualify it by saying once we move down the scale of brain injury and we move into the territory of moderate brain injury or severe brain injury, it is a different category. And we have no trials about this. To my knowledge, there are none that are underway. So we're really using clinical experience here to guide us. And when we're dealing with those sorts of patients who really have dense amnesia, typically cannot remember anything about their trauma, then it's a different story, because we can't use the imaginal exposure techniques as we normally would. We can't really use cognitive restructuring as we normally would, because these patients will have marked cognitive deficits, very little attentional control, very little capacity to use abstract thinking. And so there we have to be innovative and rely a lot on in vivo exposure. Of course, one thing we know about people with severe brain injury is that they can develop PTSD, but they'll tend to do it in the absence of memories. So for example, somebody who's been through a very severe car accident and has a brain injury does not remember the car accident, but they can have PTSD, and the re-experiencing that they will be, for example, having severe panic attacks when they're in a car, or when they're watching a film of traffic. They can have a severe panic attack and be very distressed, still not remembering their particular own accident, but that is a form of PTSD. In those cases, we'd still use the same principles of CBT and the same principles of exposure. And cases I've used, I would sit the person in front of a TV and show them videos of traffic for prolonged periods, using the same principles of extinction learning, where the person is being exposed to that stimulus, learning that it's not hurting them, teaching them that their anxiety can subside whilst they're watching it, they don't need to avoid it, and that has shown to be successful. Remembering though that in those cases, these people have very poor memory for everything, including what they learn in therapy, so typically you will need regular booster sessions to make sure that that extinction retention is being maintained over time.
Is it fair for me to assume that the greater the brain injury, the more difficult it becomes to treat someone with PTSD?
I think that's definitely the case for two reasons. One reason is what we just talked about, is that one has to, in a sense, take the place of many of that person's brain functions because they don't have them working properly themselves. So we have to be innovative in terms of how we use exposure. They're not able to do cognitive restructuring like you would with everybody, so you would have to use very, very simple techniques such as, you know, writing a thought on a card that they carry around in their wallet and that they have to remember to look at every half an hour to remind them that, for example, you know, telling them I am now safe, something as simple as that, because that's the best they can do. But really the other factor that makes treating people with a severe traumatic brain injury particularly difficult with the comorbid problems that they will have. Typically there's a lot of physical problems, they can have marked pain, there can be significant impulsivity issues, anger outbursts, depression, obsessive compulsive tendencies, so there can be a whole range of behavioural problems, and often these are the ones that the psychologist is often asked to deal with, because they're the ones that are the externalising problems that are causing issues on the hospital ward or in the community residence or the family home. And so often they're the ones that people want dealt with. But it's worth remembering that often it's a PTSD reaction underlying that that's often contributing to the excitability or the anger that the person might be experiencing.
What would you like to see in terms of research in the future? What's your wish list?
I think probably two come to mind. I think number one is this issue of post-concussive syndrome and how do we effectively treat it. At the moment, there's been, I think, an unfortunate development over time where, because of the recent conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan, I think mild traumatic brain injury has been reified as a condition. I think the military has reinforced this enormously. And there's the danger that troops are believing that sensations and different experiences that they feel, that many of us feel a lot of the time, are now being attributed to this thing called mild brain injury. It's often been referred to as the signature injury of these wars. And that's not a very useful message to be given to troops, because often they think it's a permanent problem that they will have, and there's concern about how it will affect me in the future. In contrast, we really should be doing research to understand what is the impact of that attribution that people are making, when really a much healthier one is to have the expectancy that this is a common response, these are just common feelings, and that by dealing with the stress reactions and reframing these symptoms in a more adaptive way, I can probably deal with this quite reasonably and move on and get over it. And I think we need some controlled trials that actually evaluate how we teach people to appraise those symptoms and how we can actually treat the stress reactions after a mild brain injury, and we evaluate how that actually reduces post-concussive syndrome. That's probably my number one on the wish list.
That's good. Thank you very much, Dr. Bryant. This is Jean Kaplan-Tycrow for ADAA.